dun, 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 dun.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you did that, Dan, because I was going to say it if you didn't. Dun, dun, dun. That's messed up in a hilarious sort of way.
Hey, that describes the show, messed up in a hilarious sort of way.
Sidebar, yeah, that sounds like a great thing you should have on the advertising the podcast.
Yeah, or hilarious in a messed up sort of way. I'm not sure which is better.
Greetings, OneMoreTurn.net listeners. This is Daniel Dankyouquick. I am the creator, producer, publisher, and voice performer for Hudson, Dan Quick. And I am joined by the voice performer for Avery, Jennifer Lund.
Hey, howdy, hi.
And Tim Brule, Timothy001, who voices Barry.
Hello, everybody.
So I think it's only fair, seeing as how this is Tim's first commentary, but also his first time on the show. How did you get roped into this anyway? I mean, how were you brought on board, not roped into this? What am I saying? I really should clear what it is that I'm saying with Bella or someone like that. I mean, she is a lawyer after all.
Boy.
Well, by training anyway. She's not really practicing anymore. Not really. But yes, Tim, how did you come into this role? Come onto this show?
Through you. I was on two episodes of Polycast when you were host. I'd been part of the Saturday Night Turncast group. And you asked me for season 9 if I was interested in coming on, and we couldn't get our schedules to work out, but then for season 10 you asked me to come on and voice Barry.
Excellent. Yes, so Tim had no idea who he was voicing, didn't even know the character's name, let alone any of their backstory. And for those listening, the Saturday Turncast group, it's for the Civilization series of turn-based strategy games, of which there is some loose inclusion within One More Turn. Previous character Caleb was a gamer, Bella's a gamer, so was Carson, so was Max. It's been kind of downplayed in recent seasons, but the idea is that these are geeks dealing with non-geeky problems, gamers dealing with non-gamer problems. And I also want to acknowledge the other, not one, but two new characters. That's right. We had 3 new characters this season. Kingston, voiced by Jason New Earth Relic.
Hello, how's it going?
Jason Megabears, fan grade, voicing Dominic, with Barry and Kingston being brothers of Max and Dominic being the cousin of Avery. Same question to you, which of course doesn't apply to Jennifer anymore because she's a lifer. I mean, she's been on the show since the second season. It just feels like a lifetime.
I'm not an OG One More Turner.
A certain Dan asked me to join for season 9, and I said, sure.
Jason is also a past guest on Polycast, which is a strategy podcast for Civilization, and also a recurring player in the Turncast Saturday games. And just like Tim, speaking of names as any are typed into the chat, that's Barry with an IE, not a Y.
that's the running joke of the season for us.
Barry and Kingston are both Canadian cities, right? Like we've got
that's right.
We've got our recommended daily allowance of CanCon going on.
Absolutely. And the city of Barry is spelled that way with an IE, mm-hmm. So it seemed fitting that the character would also have that. And of course, just to kind of conclude that Max is not the name of a city in Canada, but Maxville is, and it's also in Ontario, which, yes, spoiler alert, that is the province within the country that the show is set in, but we don't actually come right out and say it because that would just be too obvious.
That's never actually been called out, but I guess it hasn't been.
We've called out Canada. We've never actually called out Ontario before. So here is that added value for listening to the commentary. One More Turn. It has been confirmed that almost nobody knew that they wanted to know. Wishes that they could unhear now that they heard it.
Dan, I'd like you to explore one line that I had, which kind of made me chuckle, and I think I actually did chuckle. When Garrison goes, and the relationship's strong all these years, and I said, open, we swing. Helps keep things spontaneous, not routine. The time with you, too.
Evelyn and Garrison had intercourse in the last
That's
season.
That's how she sprained her ankle.
Got to explore the swinging thing more. That's my
story. Oh, yeah. Open marriage, as it were. Yep.
Oh, great. So he's the, oh man, Garrison is the dude who would have been friends with Jack Tripper in the 70s going down to the Regal Beagle.
Yes. Oh,
a lot more history here than I expected. Okay.
Thanks. And I think I just dated myself by knowing that much about Three's Company.
Jennifer, what were your first reactions when you had finished reading this season's scripts?
I think, honestly, just more of the dun dun dun. Yeah, I mean, you know, you call it one more turn, but I was kind of looking at all of these episodes and all the developments and thinking this should have been as the D20 turns, because it really has turned into a soap opera.
Well, you did wonder a number of years ago whether or not telenovelas could be pulled off in English, and clearly I showed that they could, so we might as well lean into what we know.
I mean, there is a surplus of drama with everybody, but sure, yeah.
And what did you think about, I know this is kind of leading a little bit into one of the later questions, but as far as your character, as far as Avery goes, what were your first reactions to Avery's journey in this season?
It's interesting to see her becoming, what, more human rather than just the cardboard cutout femme fatale who seems to have been mostly set up as a foil for Bella.
That is absolutely how she was introduced. The idea that your character when Avery was introduced in season two, that it was, hey, there can be a character that's worse than Bella, and here she is. Yes. And now we're adding more, even more dimensions to Avery. And I think even last season, through her pregnancy and this adoption journey, as you said, has really humanized her and has made her, to some degrees, a sympathetic character, which I think just goes to show how much magic that I can work. And I will credit myself for doing such a wonderful job. And oh, wait, sorry, this was Jennifer's answer. Continue. So to you, NER, what were your first reactions when you had finished reading this season's scripts?
My first one was it's fairly melodramatic in terms of all these characters are kind of awful people and they're all being awful to each other.
I just want to say right now that I did not coach you to say that, but we have had Jennifer can attest to this, talking about the awful people that are on this show for the most part. So there we go. We do have some consistency. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes back to when I first saw the bit about, oh my God, Avery's going to spawn. Yikes.
Yeah, and there's honestly no drama like family drama, just because all of the people have known each other for long enough and like they know all their weak points. And as soon as anything goes bad, there goes that screw just right in there. Just twist that and twist that and twist that.
Now, the thing about you coming on board and to you as well, Tim and Jason, that you are setting the groundwork for new characters to the show, but they are not new to a number of the characters already in the show, not just Nora, but especially Max, with Kingston and Barry being Max's brothers, who have been talked about before. And really, the things that we've established about the brothers before now were that they weren't particularly helpful in telling Max what he should or should not wear to his wedding. And also that they successfully teased Max into thinking that he was going to be voted most effeminate from his graduating class. That it really kind of set the stage for, gee, I don't really, these characters are really that good for Max. And maybe that's why we haven't heard from them before. But Jason, what was your take on Kingston specifically in this season, kind of as a first pass?
So you can hear just the raw sarcasm dripping out of, at least I hope you can hear the sarcasm dripping from my voice, like every line. Because he is very passive aggressive.
Absolutely, he is. I think that's a very spot on assessment. So to you, Tim, what were your first reactions when you had finished reading this season's scripts?
Pretty much the same. Very sarcastic, not a helpful person at all.
Are you talking about Kingston, Barry, or both?
Oh, both. Both.
Both. Okay.
Both.
Okay.
Both characters seem to me to be very similar, but also distinctive. They had different ways of coming across with their points, but both ended up at the same point.
Very true. On a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is very little and 10 is a lot, how much of Barry is like you, Tim?
6.
All right. Yep. NER, how much is Kingston like you on the same scale?
So a 3 in the way I actually am, but like an 8 on the way I kind of wish I could be, in like the internal voice that I don't want to let out because it's bad.
I really can't answer this question myself, because trying to put this season together was realizing that we were losing two characters. We were losing the character that Jennifer's husband, Rhett Jacobs, who had been around for the previous 3 seasons, seasons 7, 8, and 9. But we were also losing an original character to One More Turn, specifically Riley, voiced by Stephanie McAlua. I told Mackie that this character was going to be written out over a year before anyone else on the show knew about it, let alone any listener. It was that I felt that her story had come to a conclusion. Jacob's had served his purpose. Never intended Jacob to be a character that was going to be long lasting, but saying goodbye to Riley was a bit difficult. But given the trajectory where her final connection in the town was Hudson, and I'm not going to rehash last season, but essentially there is no more relationship between Hudson and Riley.
With Hudson, at least, it just really seems like musical women.
But I also want to point out that Dominic's line of Avery about the middle part of your Venn diagram is something else. I again credit you, Jennifer, for referencing a few seasons ago about wanting a Venn diagram of, you know, everybody schlepping with everyone else. So there you go. I wanted to put it into the show.
Thank you.
I just want to say that every time I see the line, the rustling of clothes, I get a little nervous. I have to be honest. I'm like, what's happening?
Uh-huh.
I'm a bit nervous. And it's all inconsequential. Nothing's really happening, but it's said several times.
And we know Dan is just doing this placeholders to remind himself of what sound effects are necessary. But still, you know, there's been enough of a merry-go-round of makeups and breakups and hookups and whatnot that I can see why you might be a little gun-shy. We're going to see an increase in the level of dad jokes in the scripts as your own person begins, you know, processing language.
Which episode this season is your favorite and why?
I liked episode 12.
What? Episode 12 intersection. Yes. Tim, are you looking off my notes? Because that's my favorite too.
I wish I was looking up your notes.
I think what this means is you're going to give your reasons why, and then I will have to give why, in fact, my reasons are the correct ones so that we can have some controversy on this commentary. But okay, go ahead.
It was, in my estimation, it was just before the climax of the finale. A lot of TV shows do the same thing. The second last episode, they build everything up, and then they hit you with the final. And that's what I felt this was. I felt my character had more to do in this episode than the previous episodes he was in.
Ah, okay. So definitely relating it to the character that you were voicing in part. Yeah. I can actually springboard off of that. We've got three mini plots in one, all of which are interconnected by two of three new characters, both your characters and your character, NER. This interconnectedness helps inform them. What I put in my notes here is consistently reflecting established personalities of the four existing characters. In other words, the way that the established characters were interacting with the new ones in terms of the humor, in terms of the drama, and sometimes just in terms of the complete lack of interest and almost disconnect, I think helped make this work. Because for the first time, actually, in the series, we had an episode where it is taking place in the same setting, but we are moving from space to space within that setting, which is the local hospital, because I think it allowed for the first time, and I think Jennifer, you can remember we've talked before about some of my and some other people's least favorite episodes being there's just too many characters. They're like too many cooks in the kitchen. No one has a chance, or very few characters have a chance to really shine, where you have characters that have lines that could have been given to anyone. And so in other words, why were they there? But this time, this higher than typical character tally, I think, is a strength rather than a weakness, because all of them have time to be meaningful character as well as plot wise. So it's nice to hear that from you, Tim, that you were thinking the same about your character, that not saying that we would throw out any of the other episodes that he was in this season, but that one kind of stands above. And I just got to also say that strong, risque humor between Evelyn and Garrison, who admittedly didn't have a lot to do this season, maybe because they were busy doing each other. I'm a horrible human being by even saying that. But
hopefully Evelyn's not around.
So, yes, that's why that was also my favorite episode this season. I'm kind of hoping either Jennifer and or NER will say their favorite episode is my least favorite so we can have a proper cage match. But
okay. I don't think they'll let me cross the border now that they know that.
That's fine. I'll come to you. All right, Jennifer, you reacted first. What was your favorite episode this season and why?
I think my favorite was the end, 13.
Oh, recalibration. Okay.
Yeah, because clearly there's an ending, but an ending that has a promise of, oh, holy crap. not just that there's going to be one more turn, but also that they're going to be interesting goings on in No Name Town, Ontario, Canada, with Max and Nora being roped into Avery's crazy.
I've always had kind of a runner-up in terms of favorite and least favorite, and I had a really difficult time coming up with the least favorite this year. So either that's because I'm drinking my own Kool-Aid and don't have a hard time coming up with a second least favorite, but the only reason that I actually put down the very last episode is because it falls short. Like, it literally falls short. It was unintentionally 25% short. It was only 3 pages instead of 4, and it was only pointed out when we went to record it that it was only 3 pages. Someone asked, where's the 4th page? Am I missing it? And I went, nope, I didn't notice it. Dark Cloud didn't notice it, or he didn't say anything about it. So kind of retroactively, I felt like maybe the pace was a little off, but maybe it actually worked even better because it was shorter. And in terms of the episode run length, I thought it would really jump out, but you really can't tell the difference that it's actually a page short. But then again, when you put something on a page, because of the spacing that I put in there between character lines, doesn't necessarily mean that there's actually less being said, because some people just end up with more to say, you know, end up a big block of text. So I can't even really say that was my least favorite episode, other than I wish there was just a little more.
It seemed to me it was a little bit like a cliffhanger.
Oh, totally. 100%. Tim, how do you think we get the show renewed?
I decide to do it again.
Like, I guess I kind of, you know, set this up, and I, you know, there's always one more story to tell. That's just a kind of one more turn, kind of playing into the title of the show. All right, NER, what was your favorite episode this season and why?
So I was originally going to joke that my favorite was 1008, but Dan convinced me that I was going to go to 12, but I'm going to stick with 1008 now.
That's funny, because that was my runner-up. Are you looking at my notes too? Gosh, you two. Man. We're conspiring. Even the voice performers are conspiring, not just their characters. I knew it.
The major reason is because the introduction with the discussion about the cursing is very, I don't want to say funny in like the haha way, but funny as in like Reservoir Dogs kind of way. Everyone's kind of nervous about something, and it sort of shows when they're talking about stupid stuff.
You know, that idea you're talking about, the exchange about the profanity and the what the fuck, Bella, language, English. As a high school teacher, I had a student a number of years ago swear, and I said language, and they went English. So now I don't actually say that anymore. I prompt like profanity. So that comes from my own personal experience. Just like Hudson's later comment about save me from your school teacher lecture. You know, I couldn't wait to graduate to get away from all that nonsense. A continued in joke to my being a high school teacher.
Hilarious. I just can't help hearing the whole language, as I'm not a gamer type nerd, but I'm the MCU nerd. So all I can hear with that is the whole back and forth between Iron Man and Cap in the first Avengers flick, because Cap, he was a little bit square. I also found it absolutely fucking hilarious.
Speaking of family.
Exactly. That on purpose, that no damn, no hell, no B word. It's either made up stuff or right to the F bomb. It's like these people have no sense of proportion. They're all weird, stilted children trying to cosplay as adults.
I wanted it to be purposeful. Plus, even Hudson makes a comment later about using the F word and chastising Avery. It's like, oh gosh, you even got me doing it now. When clearly he doesn't need Avery's specific influence to drop the F bomb just when he's particularly exasperated. And we finally got to that point.
I mean, honestly, cursing is fine as long as it's done with purpose. The problem that is usually when you have the people who are just like, F this, F that, F the other thing. That's when it gets awful. And you're just like, okay, what's your vocabulary? Like, 4th grader?
Yeah, exactly. I think for myself, why I chose episode 1008, Understanding, as my runner-up or favorite is because we've got Bella continuing to tell Hudson how she wants to make Carson pay to bring down, you know, Brother Dork once and for all. First, because she recognizes and is acting on Carson's mistreatment of her as reason enough to do so. But I think it also helps because it helps cement series continuity and relevance all the way back to the first season, because Hudson's ultimate solution, if it was almost any other character or any other show, you'd be like, wow, you know, Hudson's dredging up this assault on him from Carson from 9 seasons ago at Bella and her father Gary's office as a way to get back at Carson. But I like to think that it works in that way, because when we've talked before about how season 1 was very plot driven as compared to character driven, and this kind of, what do we do with this DOE contract keeps coming up. What is the DOE contract? No, I'm never going to say exactly what the DOE contract is, but to have it so that we have it acknowledged, it's not forgotten, but I also want to try to find a way for it to be meaningful. And I'd like to think that it works, given that Hudson clearly still has feelings for Bella, because on the fly, he thinks of, oh, here's something that I can do. But it also makes me think, was it really on the fly? Hudson's probably been thinking about this for a while, because he's been thinking about how Carson has been mistreating Bella, and maybe Hudson doesn't really want to get back with Bella again, despite Bella's attempt, shall we say, at one more go, which Hudson rebukes, but at the very least doesn't want to see that continue. And I also kind of like that Bella stands up for herself and starts seeing a bit more of the version of her that we first saw, like in the first and second season, that made Avery such a good adversary for her.
Hey, Dan.
Yes, Steve.
I noticed that the language is a little bit up today. I noticed some fucking and shitting and stuff going on. I don't recall that in the previous episodes, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention.
This one's rated R?
Oh, that's what I'm thinking.
There has been profanity in the past in the show. I would say there's probably a little bit more this season, and that was kind of to give the sense of escalation in terms of the frustrations, including from Hudson, who I think may have sworn like once or twice so far. I don't think he's ever used the F word. It's purposeful. I don't want to get it to the point where every character is using the F word every third or fourth sentence, because that's their vocabulary now. But just for emphasis, or emphasis, if you prefer.
It also makes sense to me that anybody was going to bust the profanity cherry, it was going to be Hudson.
But to say, Dan, you've used the F word a bunch of times already. First. It's like every third page.
That's true.
We do lists a lot, Dan.
Yeah, we do lists a lot. I mean, yes, it's true. That's the true F word, is first.
Good diversity with Dan in his top 10 list.
Just what the bleep is happening now?
Yeah, no kidding.
Now it's time to complain, or at least more than usual. What episode this season is your least favorite, and why? So you were looking off of Dark Cloud's notes. The first episode is always that. No. What was it about the first episode? Again, it doesn't necessarily mean that you disliked the episode, but that made you like it the least.
Because I didn't read everything or listen to everything beforehand, so I was going in completely blind. So I felt a little lost.
What, you mean you didn't go back and listen to the previous 9 seasons before you started reading the scripts? No, I totally understand.
Yeah. It was a mess of my own making, and I've been slowly listening.
Did you go back to season 1, or did you go just back to season 9?
I went to season 8 to start, but now I'm looking at going back all the way.
What made you go back to season 8 as compared to season 9?
Random choice.
Oh, okay.
I figure going back 2 seasons might be better than just 1. Give me a little bit more context for some of the stuff.
Well, it wasn't my favorite episode, but it also wasn't my least favorite, but it wasn't my favorite episode, so no controversy there.
My least favorite was 1002.
Ah, okay. So again, episode Tim's least favorite was Generation, and yours, NER, is Consternation. What about Consternation? Well, gave you Consternation.
I was honestly expecting more drama, and it just didn't really set that up well, I think. Maybe it's just the fact that I haven't listened to One More Turn before.
Was it kind of we get to the end of the episode and it's just, oh, that's the reveal, this reference to this character that isn't even around anymore?
Pretty much. So it doesn't help that I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's so-and-so. Okay.
Looking back through the script, I think it's kind of a tie between 10-3 and 10-4.
Okay, Jennifer's also looking off of my notes, because that was my least favorite, was 10.03. You notice how we're also going in numerical order here. Tim started and it was 10.001, and now it's 10.02 from NER. Okay, 10.03 arrival, and then 10.04 is proposition.
Things start getting more interesting later into the season, but 10.03 was just these two odious people talking to each other about other people. And by the time poor Max shows up, it's just in time for these idiots to start having a go at him. And I'm sorry, his brothers are terrible. And I would pay good money to be able to see Nora just take both of them by the neck and clunk their heads together.
Well, I'm glad they came across that way, because that's how they were intended to be written.
I mean, I'm sure I know you do nothing without, well, almost nothing without intention. You know, there's some happy accidents, I'm sure. But no, it is absolutely clear that Kingston and Barry are not nice people. But how many people in this town and in this show really are?
Does it make you celebrate and champion Max even more to say that, wow, Max turned out the way that he did, maybe in spite of these brothers?
I mean, it makes Max make more sense, if nothing else.
And maybe Nora, too, Nora's general dismissiveness of Max's brothers to this point in the show as well.
Yeah, basically. I find myself wondering now that you ask that way, obviously she had to have met Max somehow. She had to have met the other brothers somehow. What persuaded her to keep hanging around if two out of the three of them are terrible?
Well, if two out of three ain't bad, then one's good. We did previously establish in the show that Max and Nora were high school sweethearts, and then in post-secondary they kind of disconnected, but then they reconnected after that. So yes, Nora would have had to have known of Max's family, or ought to have known anyway. I mean, live in a small town, everyone knows everyone. And even knowing who his brothers were, still decided to marry him. And clearly right from that interaction, Nora is making her disdain clear, which really up to this point in the series, it was, even I had the thought of, oh, so Nora just doesn't reserve that disdain for Hudson. There's at least two others that are also worthy of her dislike. Was the fact that runner-up is 1004, is that just because it was more of Barry and Kingston being Barry and Kingston?
Pretty much, yeah. You're right that the show has long since stopped being plot-driven and is now character-driven. But even with that, 1003 and 1004 both, but particularly the start of 1003 just seemed to be a little excessively talky about people who aren't around anymore, who are involved but weren't in the scene. I was just looking at the first couple of pages of that going, holy exposition dump, Batman.
It's true. Well, I mean, clearly they only have each other to talk to, because who else on the bus would want to talk to them?
Uh-huh. Now that I think about it, it reminds me, they're like the evil Star Trek version of Larry, Darryl, and Daryl from the Newhart show.
Oh, my gosh. You see, kids.
Oh, God. I just dated myself, didn't I?
I know you've given episode 1003 and 1004 as more or less a tie, but maybe, just maybe, I can help tip your scales towards 1003, not just because it was my choice, but because at least at the end of 1004, Max, I would say, is almost atypical Max, which is kind of standing up to both of them and politely telling to shut up and shove off.
Honestly, I'm going to spoil one of my takes for later, but one of the things I did sort of liked and didn't like about 1004 is that Max is like, oh, I'm going to talk to you, even though you guys are absolute jerks. But yeah, like, you know, your brothers are trash. Don't bother. Just walk away, buddy.
Yeah, I think that would have been the better choice. And Max finding the good or the worthwhile in people is perhaps in this particular case does him a disservice. And he probably has, whether he maybe realizes or not, has a soft spot for his brothers. And unfortunately, does still value their opinion for whatever reason. Maybe we'll explore that a little more in season 11, ..
Yeah, I hadn't realized, but yeah, towards the end of 1004, where Max is wheeling and dealing with his brothers, and Kingston is like, oh, move on, Max. We haven't been children for 20 years now. And Max just comes right back. Which one of us attended college out of town, out of province, got married, had children? Damn, Max. Okay.
And Max is the one that concludes this conversation. Like, he's just like, no, I'm done. I think that's exactly what they needed. But Torto Denier said the fact that he listened to them in the first place, and we know from later in the season that clearly what Kingston and Barry had to say is still sticking around in Max's head, in part because Kingston and Barry are still around. But I think these two brothers also recognize that, if we want to accomplish what it is that we're intending to accomplish here, and that is purposely not made completely clear in this season, that they got to start interacting with other people that Max interacts with. And it's not just Nora, because they already know that, well, Nora's opinion of us is already set. Time to interact with some other people in this town and hopefully make a better first impression. For myself, I had felt, and it's kind of about the holy exposition, by the way, that you mentioned, Jennifer, that introducing one or even two new characters in a single episode is fine, especially when those characters can play off of each other, but that's all that they do. That for the majority of it, where it's just the two of them, it does detract from understanding their personalities. Because in that particular case, I feel like it's less character driven and it's more plot driven, because they're talking about this point and that point and this point and that point. And it's like, why are we talking about all of this? In hindsight, maybe it would have been better for some of those things to come up in conversation with one or more other characters and over more than one episode. But I guess the positive thing to look at it about this is we got the two of them to get all that exposition out of the way, and we can contain it in one episode, and then we can just, you know, slice it off and then throw it away in the trash if we need to. And it doesn't taint any other episode.
Yeah. Rip the Band-Aid off. I just realized, too, it's not so much Larry, Daryl, and Daryl. It's the goofy Martians from Sesame Street. Yep, 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 yep. They only talk to each other, and they're only talking about things that they understand, and nobody else around them gets it, but they are unbothered by that.
Oh, Barry. Oh, Kingston.
Boy, aren't these two just a... Yeah.
It makes you wonder how Max became to be Max. Or maybe it was because of them that he is the Max. He wanted to be nothing like these two.
I'm fairly sure that Max is just dissociated and we don't know the real Max. Okay, see, this is how you know you married well.
Yes. If only your characters could do the same.
No doubt.
Tell us again how much you hate Carson. Look at us, real life people, doing better than the characters we play.
Yay! Oh.
All right, we'll switch back to the positives here. Who is your favorite character this season and why? And I think this is both a challenge and not for both you, Jason, and you, Tim. It's a challenge in terms of that you really haven't had the other seasons to listen to, and you don't have to even subconsciously have in your mind what has or hasn't happened before creep into your decision. But then that also makes it perhaps even more difficult for that reason, because either you probably found too many characters to like. Who am I kidding? We know that's not true. That you have probably so many characters to dislike. How can you choose the one that's the least crappy? And that can be a challenge.
So I liked Bella the most, just because she came across as the puppeteer of the group. And I love watching, in a dysfunctional show, watching the puppeteer just work.
Okay, you are on notice. You are looking at my notes again. I mean, not specifically the reasons why, but I also chose Bella. So there you go.
Yeah, like Kingston and Barry are like the Three Stooges of puppeteers. They're trying their best to try and change how everyone interacts with everyone. But like, they're just so obnoxious and unlikable that no one actually does. So that's why it knocks them down, in my opinion.
Tim and you, Jennifer, did either of you choose Bella as well?
No.
No. Although I don't dislike her, she's not the person that I'm going to tag as my least favorite, of course. Because these are all terrible people, I always find myself having an easier time of, you know, who is the most odious favorite character.
Seeing as how you specifically mentioned Bella their NER, I will kind of extend on that in terms of my reasons why I chose Bella. And I put in brackets, I was also almost her last season. I had in my notes it was almost last. And this is the first time that I've chosen Bella as my favorite character. Not because I thought she would always be my least favorite character, but I never thought she would quite elevate to favorite. But First of all, while not agreeing in the moment, she listens attentively and patiently to Reese explain why Carson is not treating her well. She finally expresses her frustration with Carson when he suggests she would rather be with Hudson when Carson makes the comment about that he's always got his points. Wow, dude. Bella decides to speak to Hudson privately about taking action against Carson for treating her poorly. So we go from episode 1002 to 1003 and 1007. And then in the next episode, Bella then does respect his rejection of her. Hudson rejects her personal overtures in the process, but Bella also makes clear her professional disposition towards Avery by providing her legal advice regarding the adoption of the child when she was approached to do so. Bella realized that Avery is not my favorite person, and I know that I am not Avery's favorite person, but this is someone who is in a very difficult situation, and she's trying to do right by her child, and Bella had the education and the experience and the resources to actually help and provide that help, and she did so when there really is no personal advantage. Like, I don't really see what Bella is gaining by this. I mean, we've never really talked about money. It sounds like Bella is probably getting some kind of remuneration, but still, and as we can see through this season and previous seasons, she's getting a lot of grief for this because it does cause her some difficulties, not just in a relationship with Carson, but also trying to maintain a relationship with Hudson as well. So for those reasons, Bella was my favorite character this season. What about you, Tim? Then I'll come back to Jennifer.
Max.
Max. Max has been my favorite in two previous seasons. And I will also say that there was no way that Max was my least favorite character at all. But for you, Tim, what made Max your favorite?
Well, kind of bad for him because of all the crappy advice he was getting.
But whose bad advice comes to mind first and foremost when you say that?
Barry's and Kingston's.
Oh, okay. He had to deal with crap and crappier?
Yep. Dumb and dumber. The list goes on.
I really do think that both Barry and Kingston treat Max as a child very dismissively. And I mean, they're conspiring to manipulate the guy. I mean, at least does sound consistent with their childhood, which kind of also goes to your point earlier, NER, which is like, Max, I think you should respect yourself more than this, than to put yourself through this and listen to this garbage.
Yeah, honestly, my impression on Kingston, Barry, is that they're smart, but not as smart as they think they are.
That's right. I mean, they're coming from the big city here, as it were, because that's where they live now. And they're coming back to this small town. And, well, maybe their reputation is ultimately going to precede them and they're going to get put in their place. All right. So we've had a couple of votes for Bella. We've had a vote for Max's favorite character. Does Max get another vote, Jennifer, or is it someone else completely?
His better half does.
Nora. Okay. I keep tallies for myself. Last season, Nora was my favorite, and she's been my favorite 4 out of 10 seasons. So, yeah, there's definitely something about Nora. So in this season, what about Nora makes her your favorite?
Episode 10, 11, basically her sitting and listening to Avery having her freak out. And not just telling her, oh, sister, you knew what you were getting into when you got yourself knocked up and all of that kind of stuff.
I think Nora is in a unique position out of everyone else in this cast to be able to talk to Avery about this circumstance because she's lived something very similar, not exact, but something very similar, which is giving birth and all of the decisions and emotions and just weight of that decision that it can carry. Plus, yes, she also listens to Avery. She's not just talking at Avery. She's listening to Avery. And I think Avery is appreciating that. I mean, Avery is someone that approached her. I think Avery picked well, and the fact that Avery also listened to Nora just kind of speaks to Nora being Nora, which is putting someone else's needs ahead of her own.
Yeah, and then agreeing to drive her to the hospital.
Jacob's probably left his chat window open mid-composition of his text.
And there are my answers.
Composition? Do you realize how old you sound when you say that?
Quoting Carson from earlier this episode is not that impressive.
I really hate what Carson's doing. Watching a text, waiting for a text, thinking, why isn't this person texting? I hate that. I hate that so much. And also, I want to go off on this because the little bubble thing, I have to struggle with autocorrect, changing every single word I try to type. So I have to backspace, retype, and it's so frustrating just getting one sentence out. I hate Carson.
Yeah, the chances of me ever typing the word duck autonomously are incredibly low. Also, if you want to quit, you know, monitoring your phone, you can just turn on read receipts.
I think this is a good inner monologue in Carson's head. This is what he's thinking instead of listening to what Reese is saying.
Yeah.
The comment from Carson about maybe you like to throw yourself back at Hudson, as he always has a point. Wow, Carson. Wow.
I'm just still gobsmacked that they're pissing and moaning at each other about a cat with a cold.
Well,
yeah, it's like Carson doesn't know how to talk to people at all. I just...
I think it's just easier for them to talk about the cat when, of course, they're really talking about their relationship. But, of course, they can't be that real with each other. Because that would be the mature thing to do, and they're not in a mature
relationship. So the cat doesn't have a cold, it's the relationship that has a cold?
I feel really sorry for the cat, and I don't mean they're cold. So Jason, what is it like playing a character that's a major shit disturber in a place of so many shit disturbers?
Well, it's not something I'm used to doing.
You're entirely too good at it!
Least favorite character this season and why? Carson, who I previously also said he was my least favorite two times. Did anyone else choose Carson?
Nope.
No.
I thought about it, but I went for the funny answer instead of the serious answer.
My case for Carson. He's rude to Reese in episode 1005. He implies to Bella that she is more interested in Avery and her child's well-being than that of their relationship, and in front of Reese, no less, in the same episode. Also in the same episode, says Bella would like to throw herself back at Hudson, as he always has a point, still in front of Reese. In the same episode, so we're just continuing here, not one thing, not two things, not three things, but four, Carson claims that Bella is different than before they've got married and that he has had to adapt, all while again in front of Reese. And I'm like, wow, pot, kettle, black much. I will say that Carson has minimal, and I mean minimal, redemption by calling Kingston out on his threat he made to himself and Bella and Nora's lives being unbearable when he told Kingston that the bag of hot air and no substance, that is you. But that by no way takes away from how he is treating and indeed mistreating Bella. And on top of it, now starting to air that laundry in front of other people. And it's not even other people that want to even know about that business. Reese is just kind of caught in the crossfire. Dude, get your stuff together, or maybe it's time for you to go again and not come back. All right, NER, you said you went with the humorous answer and not the serious answer. What's your humorous answer for least favorite? I am intrigued, sir.
So my least favorite here was Nora, because she's like the actual good person in this show.
Oh, so she doesn't fit. That's why she's least favorite character. She's one of these things doesn't belong. Sesame Street lesson?
Pretty much. Like, I'm thinking about Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and like every single person there is like the world's worst person. And then just throwing in the straight man out of the group just wouldn't make that work.
On that premise, how come it went to Nora and not Max?
Nora is more than anyone else the best connected. Like, I think Nora is why Max comes across the way he is, because she's a person who's sort of being his better half in a positive way.
Well, I would agree with that. She helps Max run his life, and I think Max would be the first to readily admit that.
Yeah, Nora runs him.
Yes, Max would be completely lost without Nora. Nora without Max, she would also suffer, but I don't think she would be lost. I think she would adjust better, for sure.
Yeah, she would be fine. Max just seems like the guy who, if he doesn't have Nora, he's just going to have like the pile of dirty dishes in the sink from like World War II.
Nora being out of the picture would be probably dream come true for Barry and Kingston in terms of whatever their manipulation plans are. And hopefully that never, ever happens for Max's sake and the sake of his twins and, quite frankly, a number of other people in this cast, which I would go into, but that would be way too much of a tangent, even for a commentary on this show.
Or for you.
Or for me. All right, Tim, who was your least favorite character this season and why?
It's a 2-4.
Oh my. Well,
Barry and Kingston.
And did you phrase it that way so that we'd have some Canadian content in the commentary? No. Oh, okay. That was just a happy accident. All right.
Yes, completely happy accident. Their manipulation of Max and their true intentions haven't been revealed yet, but they're plotting something. And I don't think it's going to be good for Max.
Even if you knew what that intention was right now, it sounds like that wouldn't change your mind about saying that they're your least favorite.
No. the storyline with them in it and what they're plotting in that, I like. It's just as a character themselves, they are not nice characters. They are manipulative. They are deceitful. And they're not the type of people you want around you.
I certainly can't argue with that. If I was to come up with runners up, I think I would actually give the negative edge just slightly more to Kingston, but that's more about how Kingston comes across. I think Barry is a little better in terms of interacting with other people. Kind of Kingston kind of says something negative and then Barry kind of scolds him, but that's also kind of their routine, their shtick. I mean, that even comes up in the conversation with Nora, right? It's like, oh yes, I see you guys are going to try to play it off each other when you're both just equally as bad. Like, forget about it.
Yeah, I always got Kingston's eldest impressions, then Barry, then Maxville.
Dominic.
Ooh.
Two episodes, and he's just fucking terrible. Sorry.
Would that also have, speaking of that word in another context, so that has something in part to do with what he says to Avery about Jacob?
Basically all of the things that he says to her. He's really awful, and... And the fact that in, what is it, it's 10-10, that he's just plotting and planning with Reese and saying not overtly awful things about Evelyn and Garrison. If you are talking about those two and not swearing or spitting or something, that means you are a flawed human being. Yeah. No, he's just... Yeah.
I think he does have some understandable beef with respect to what's going on with Avery's kid in terms of the... We already had this arranged. No, we had no contract, but I've got all this documentation to support that, yes, your plan was to have me adopt your child. He talks about the steps that he has taken, which to me, given everything else he's saying, he's really kind of said, I've spent a lot of money on this, so let me have the kid already. But the way he presents it and it comes across, it's about a victory. Like getting the kid is a victory for him. It's a point. It's a win. It's not about the best interest of the child. And trying to draw Reese into this crap while also making Avery feel like crap just kind of doubles down on the awfulness.
Yeah, I don't have much use for people who treat children as pawns in their own demented little games. And I know this is not meant to be like terribly serious, but I have personal reasons for not having much use for that sort of thing.
There are people who just don't set out their voicemail. They have it, they just don't.
Yes, and people who have to make outbound calls to those sorts of people because we're in customer service, thank the ever-loving crap out of them.
And I see if that was me, I would just maybe already do like I record, I make an entry. It's like, oh, I tried to call this person at this time, but no answer, no voicemail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, sir, it didn't happen, but yeah, if you don't have to talk to somebody who's an entitled sort of person, plus one would do again.
Oh, which would mean the show wouldn't exist because most of these people are entitled, and if you don't talk to them, then nothing happens.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, there's a level of horrible here that's sort of entertaining.
So what you're saying is the thought of you being in customer service and having to talk to almost any one of the characters in this show is major cringe.
Kill me now.
My husband's playing on the computer next to me, and I get a message. He's like, your character sounds so snotty. I should hear the other ones.
Very few of the characters are super lovable.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very generous, Annalie. You're implying that most of them are lovable in some kind of way. I mean, lovable to dislike, I suppose. I mean, that's love to hate.
I was about to say, reading
Nora
this, I love the dog.
And I will not hear any slander about her. Max is okay, but a little bit weird, and everybody else is sus AF.
Yeah. It's like Dan took a page out of MASH or Seinfeld, making them just really horrible people.
I love the sound of the dog. Unfortunately, it gets no lines in this. Super lovable, though.
Sweet.
I'm assuming it's a corgi or something.
Yeah,
Bella
actually
would totally get a corgi or maybe a pit bull.
When my wife and I were looking at adopting a dog, the first dog we looked at, his name was Miles. And so this was kind of my incorporating that into the, he ended up being adopted by someone else. But he was
I continue, Dan, to be annoyed that there is mention of a kitty cat and no sound effects for said kitty cat. Dan, I'm just saying, I can make cat noises.
Oh, no.
I don't think we need that insight into Avery's personal.
Like Avery purring into my ears.
Just talking more about actual meowing and, you know.
You know, all I see is my Skype bubble at the bottom that says Ayla saying image right after talking about, you know, cat purring and Avery's personal life. And I'm not sure I want to maximize this screen right now. And interestingly enough, the dog we ended up adopting was not named Miles, but Miley. Yeah.
Did she come in like a wrecking ball?
As we go on to the next question, which is for either your or any character for that matter this season, what do you think his or her highs or lows were? I'll actually start with you, Jennifer. Did you choose Avery or did you choose somebody else?
So I went ahead and chose Avery mainly because she's kind of the linchpin that all of this stuff is rotating around now. That to me is inherently interesting. Yes, I'm biased because I enjoy voicing that character. But I think her high, honestly, is the crazy bomb that she drops at the end where, you know, she's like, well, I'd hoped Max would be here so I could ask both of you. But, you know, hey, Nora, will you guys adopt my baby? I mean, it's the clearest evidence that she's shown, I think, ever, that she understands that she's on a crazy train and she would kind of like her kid to not have to ride that train involuntarily from birth.
And given the established track record that Max and Nora have in raising their twins, which is not that we hear any news about them, but in a lot of cases, no news is good news. So yeah. Clearly they're doing something right. They also have the support system, which is Nora's mother. And even Max came on board with having her there, and Nora was and then wasn't and then was again on board, as we established in previous seasons. And the fact that Max and Nora associate with these the people in the town that aren't the greatest choice, which includes other possible choices, still, Max and Nora have managed to isolate their children from this, and probably they would do the exact same thing with Avery's child. So yes, I think that's definitely a, if not the high for Avery. And you talked about this collision course. This is a little course correction. There's lows, and there's also the kind of high lows, right? Which is, it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that.
I'm a little pressed on that.
I mean, it's possible that there wasn't a low and there was just a high low, or maybe there was no high low and there was just a low, or heck, it could just be a high.
I think probably her high low for Avery would be her feeling the need herself to be like, oh my God, I need to call Nora because I need help. Those are three words that you don't generally associate with Avery.
I think no doubt the conversation that she had with Nora helped. I think Avery was already thinking about Max and Nora as a possible, please adopt my child to get me out of everything else that I've tried to do that clearly isn't working, whether it's with Dominic or maybe it's something involving Hudson. And that conversation with Nora just confirmed that, yes, I need to do this. I need to go this route instead.
Well, and more than that, it's she's not usually lowering herself to asking for genuine help. She's usually asking for collaborators or co-conspirators. But here, she needs help.
It's Avery in a vulnerable state. And although we know that she is, the fact that Avery is acting on it and in a good way, I think, adds some depth to Avery, which even when I first started writing this character, I wasn't certain she would ever achieve that. But I think getting pregnant with Caden's child and then realizing, yes, this child is coming. Now, what do I do? I really feel that she, and to use a baseball metaphor, she really stepped up to the plate here. She's setting everything up to hit a home run for this kid.
Something like that. And I think that once she's passed, I will say, And you being a fairly newly minted parent yourself, you probably have a little better access to immediate memories of this than I do. But I absolutely remember the hormonal roller coaster that I was after I gave birth. And, you know, I was young, I bounced back, didn't really suffer any ill effects physically, but still, it was a hell of a thing. And I cried at the drop of a hat for a good 6 months afterwards. So God only knows what Avery is going to be like once she's not pregnant anymore.
Well put. Absolutely. And I think even more about how I was as a dad emotionally afterwards. I would have not predicted it. And I won't go into details here, but it was not good for a little while. And I really had to, I had to lean on Alice. I had to lean on my wife considerably for that. And I still very much remember it. There was no question, you know, we're going to be raising our child. Like, there was no adoption consideration whatsoever. And this is exactly what Avery is dealing with. And our support system here it's limited. It's good, but it's limited. But Avery, she's got no one.
Right. She does not have a village. And I think that's more of why her high is asking Nora and Max, please, you adopt my baby. You are this child's only hope of not turning out to be desperately messed up. But she had to be, I think, for her. I think if somebody could ask Avery, what was your lowest point this time around? I had to lower myself to ask for help from that square, Nora. I think that's how she would see it, but I think she didn't see any other rational thing to do.
Tim, did you choose your character or a different character?
My character.
I'm going to give you a really difficult task here and ask, what was the high or highs for Barry this season?
His introduction was the high, obviously. It's his first appearance. No real point of reference to go on, so it's like, okay.
Is it one low or is it more than one?
It's his manipulation. So it's constant throughout the episode. Just the way he's trying to manipulate Max. I think that's a low.
And with the conspiring with Kingston at the same time. Yeah, as also being
conspiring, backstabbing. He's not a nice person. He's not as bad as Kingston, but he's not a nice character.
Am I inferring correctly that there's no high-low?
No. There wasn't enough of the character for the season to get any more impression than that for me.
Fair enough. What about you, NER? Did you choose Kingston?
Yeah, I decided to go and cheat and go with the character that I read his lines like 10 times each.
Would you say his high of there being one and also being one low, just kind of copy-paste what Tim just said about Barry?
Yeah, I loved his introduction and like the bribing the kids for info. Like, good job. This guy's a real asshole.
Uncle of the year right there, yep.
He's getting into like the divorce drama by also hopping in instead of being an adult. For his lows, that was an odd choice to do the IE and not Y comment for Barry. But it also set up a good joke later with the no one cares, which also sort of highlights their relationship. And like Kingston is the guy on top. And as soon as Barry has something at all interesting to say, it doesn't even matter that Kingston did it a couple times. He's just going to be like, yeah, no one cares. And just sideline Barry.
Yeah, but it's only... At this point, is it more about sidelining Barry or is it more about it's only interesting when I say it?
A little bit of both.
I'd also chose my character, in this case, Hudson. He is your garden variety bad, as Jennifer put it. And in that particular case, I guess he is a perennial because you plant him and he keeps coming back. And you really wish he wouldn't. Although I will start with a high. Let's start with the positive, which to me was almost unbelievable that Max did this. But Max asked Hudson for advice. Admittedly, as Max put it, on account of his experience with moral ambiguity, which Hudson was like, oh, I think it's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. But Hudson said, like, forget about working with either of your brothers. And also forget about working with Carson, who had been mistreating Bella. And when Hudson told him so, I mean, Hudson was sound and selfless. Like in this particular case, Hudson has made it clear that he's not interested in getting back with Bella romantically, but he still cares about her. And it's one of those, okay, you're clearly treating Bella badly, Carson. And I'm going to use this opportunity with Max asking for advice to also kind of put in, this is why you shouldn't not just work with your brothers, but you need to stop working with Carson. That was in the final episode of the season. So it was kind of like, oh, hey, you actually did some good here. His high-low was when Hudson called Avery out privately for not telling him about Dominic, because again, Dominic was the first person she had made an arrangement with to adopt her and Caden's baby. And that part's the high, but his backing out, he's like, well, I'm just kind of done with this. So you're now making it about you, which he's very good at, but it's to the detriment of that very child. And that's a low. But his other lows continued. Again, that was in episode 1006. In the very next episode, Hudson may be right in that everything he put in his blog post about his and Avery's relationship is a fact, you know, facts that came out in the open when you ran for mayor, okay. But still, not only is it not cool, but Hudson kind of makes out like, well, I'm the injured party here because you've clearly made this arrangement that doesn't involve me in adopting the child. Well, even if we weren't talking about another human being and it should be about them, the thing is, Hudson, you make it like you were reacting to this, but you weren't, because by your own admission, you pre-planned this. You drafted this post weeks ago, and you only didn't publish it because he was like, well, I thought we could resolve our adoption disagreement. But clearly, resolution to the agreement meant that Avery would do what it is that he wanted still, which was to have the two of them raising the child with him as uncle. And then in episode 1008, Hudson agrees to help Bella against Carson, who was treating her poorly, is a high. But as was, again, I think he's refuting her sexual advances as being misplaced and inappropriate. In order to do so, he dredges up an incident from a decade ago from the first season, as Max would put it, that hasn't been on the radar since. Like, this is just, okay, let's contrive this to go after Carson. Yes, Carson needs to have something done, something said to him, but bring him up for assault charges? Like, how is that going to necessarily help? Because maybe that would detract Carson's attention for a little while, and that's something that Bella can work on, but it's not going to make Carson treat Bella any better. So it almost, again, kind of seems like, who's going to benefit from this, Hudson, if it actually gets resolved in your favor? Oh, it's going to be you.
For whom flip phones are the height of technology and a little too complicated.
You know, I'm surprised you're not using a flip phone right now and pretending to be Star Trek going Captain's Log, you know, whatever.
Oh, dear God. Let's not give him any ideas.
I'm significantly older. And guess what? So is Dan.
Season 1 came out in 2014, and here we are in 2024.
My goodness.
For lastly, of speaking of highs and low highs and lows, what about plot developments for this season? And I think a lot of this has already come up in what we've already been talking about. I do want to say, I'll kind of start here, that the low, I just want to point out again, Dominic's nastiness towards Avery. And I know that came up a lot with what you were saying, Jennifer, about why he was your least favorite character. And I got to, again, cite that line about implying why Jacob would quote unquote never lay her was particularly awful. Jacob's sexual orientation has nothing to do with it, but the fact that Dominic would even say that, because that's neither here nor there, is just absolutely none of his business. And of course, the other low, and it's also come up already, is Kingston and Barry. Wow. Just what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it, not cool. The high, again, and you mentioned it, Jennifer, about Avery, is Avery coming to this realization that the best route for my child, knowing the options that I have when I do have this control, is to go with Max and Nora. And I guess a related high to that is, yay, Nora, for you saying yes. Although, and this is going to come up in season 11, the fact that you told Nora yes without talking to Max, that might be an issue. But the fact that Avery said this and came to this conclusion, I think, is absolutely fantastic. And this low and high, I'm going to say the low and high, and we haven't really talked about this, is what's going on with Evelyn and Garrison. I mean, they have been sidelined while stuff that's going on, but they've got this podcast venture with Reese. I mean, who goes into podcasting anymore? I mean, seriously.
It's a dead art.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's so passe. It's done. It's tired. Nearing its expiry date. It's certainly past its best before. And it's a high low because it's a high in terms of, wow, these three people are going to find something to do, maybe something constructive that kind of draws on their experience. But it's also in terms of a low because, especially from Reese's perspective, because you've got Evelyn and Garrison who are, well, lovers, and she's like the third wheel now that they're in a personal relationship, more of a personal relationship than they were before, and again, Reese is just kind of tagging along. Does anyone else have a high or a low high or a low in terms of plot developments for this season that we haven't talked about, or quite frankly, you just want to come back to?
I think mine is, and I think this is kind of a low in the sense that this is a negative thing that could be happening to a person, but it's not horrible, right? It's just, I find it fascinating in a train wrecky, oh my God, I can't look away sort of way, to actually sit down and realize just exactly how many people are vying for this poor child. Bella and Carson, who can't even take care of a pet kitten. Dominic, who just, no. Hudson, who, you know, what, wants to play house with Avery or something? None of these people have any business being involved with a child. And then who the bleep knows what Pi, Kingston, and Barry have their hands in about this, because they haven't really come right out and said it. But yeah, that whole as the nursery baby mobile turns kind of thing that I found fascinating in a horrible sort of way. And then I will just go back to it that I really think the high for this season, it may be not Avery actually asking the question at the end of the last episode, but coming to that conclusion when she does come to it, that, oh my God, looking at all of these horrible people, who's going to be the best for this child?
Given how long Max and Nora have associated with all of these varying degrees of horrible people and are still the people that they are in season 10,
exactly,
is another testament to why they should be. Yeah, Hudson, I mean, he was agreeing that, fine, not going to make out to this child that I'm his dad, I'll be Uncle Hudson. But I think Hudson's coming from the perspective of that, well, you're talking about him putting up for adoption. I was put up for adoption. I know what that experience is like. We're not doing that. He's got family here that should be involved. So that's going to be me, and we should do that. It's no one person's situation is what necessarily other people are going to experience. I mean, you can absolutely speak to your truth, and you should. I think you should own that. You can draw from that. It's a strength. It can also be a weakness. But to say that, well, if he's going to be an adoptee, then he's going to experience what I experienced, he's missing the mark. And he's making it about himself, right? He's like, I'm the expert authority in this group on adoption because I'm the adoptee. It's like, well, you definitely bring a perspective that no one else can, but that doesn't mean that you're in the best position to do that. But then this kind of reinforces to Hudson, who also likes to make himself out as, not only am I sometimes the underdog in this situation, but other people should feel bad for thinking poorly about me because look at me. And look at how wonderful I am. And again, as he rightly points out, I always have a point. Yes, you do, Hudson. And sometimes your point is you don't have a point. Or maybe that's a little too harsh, that your point isn't the only one that should be taken into consideration. So yes, definitely also another low. So easy to point out the lows in this show. Any highs and lows for plot developments this season?
Yeah. So my joke one was that we finally learned Maxville's real name.
Who knew? We thought all this time it was just Max or maybe Maximilian, but nope, it's Maxville.
Yeah, my serious one was a good choice on the adoption. I'm sure no one's surprised by that. I also spoiled my blow as well about, this is actually early on, but Max just walk away from Kingston Barry. Like, they're your brothers, you know that they're bad people. I'm sure that there was a split and they're on a bus to go and meet you. Like, you know what's going on. Walk away.
I mean, we know that they've had some interaction with Max and Nora and the twins, because as you noted, NER, Kingston bribed his niece and nephew to get some information. But at the same time, we haven't heard a lot about them since the kids were born. And clearly the relationship between Max was strained before that, and also Nora as well. So the fact that you two are here now means nothing good. You finally come up with some reason to mess with Max and Nora just for the shits and giggles. say you want to define your life, that's how you're getting your jollies. I think someone even used that word or a similar word that might have been UNAR a little earlier in this commentary, then we need nothing to do with you. And I, frustrated as I am with Max not walking away, I'm also frustrated with Nora not going a little too far, especially when Max said, oh, I'll talk to my brothers here, Nora. I'll let you know what the result is. I wish she had just even said, Max, I think you should walk away too. And she didn't, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, my guess when I was reading it was that she just wanted him to go and relearn a lesson.
Yeah. Tim, were there highs in the plot developments this season, as far as you were concerned?
Not really.
What about the lows?
The dynamic between the three brothers. It was just, it's completely dysfunctional.
Did it feel like it kind of said, like, here's a textbook example of, you know, you can pick your friends, but not your family?
Yep. Unfortunately, it reminds me a little bit about the relationship I have with my own brother.
Well, I want to say I'm sorry to hear that it does that, because that's what you're experiencing. But as I've also said in previous commentaries, it's nice to hear that from the perspective of, okay, people who are listening to this show, and I realize you're also a voice performer, but still, people who are listening to the show are able to relate one or more characters' circumstance to their own. And I think that just helps draw people in and keep people listening. And also, to me, says, okay, I'm doing something right that I'm able to speak to the audience. I feel like that I'm having a conversation with the audience. You know, I'm talking with them in a way, not talking at them.
Wow, yeah. So apparently Avery wants Max and Nora to adopt her child.
Well, they're the only couple that's still a couple, really.
That's true.
I think they're also the only, like, mentally healthy people in this entire cast.
Oh, definitely. Nora's good with this plan. Dot, dot, dot.
But then we've got the question of Max, because if you put the baby into that group, they already have twins, and yep, they have Uncle Frick and Frack in the background pouring poison into everybody's ears.
It's true, but maybe Uncle Frick and Frack there will come up against Nora's mother, who's still living with them.
Oh my.
Not just a mama bear, but a grandma bear.
They're going to have to kick her out. They need an extra bedroom.
I can just see that Max and Nora are like, okay, Mora, Max, you tell Grandma. Well, it'll be cute if coming from you.
The other thing is, that means that Max and Nora are gonna be henceforth and forever chained by the hip to Avery. Do they really want that?
Well, Nora kind of said it there, to protect him from Hudson, Reese, and a lot of the rest of that lot. I mean, Nora really hates Hudson, so that's just kind of like, okay, I'm going to do it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, does she really understand that it's not like adopting a puppy?
No. And in my mind, it's going to be Max trying to get Nora to see that, but it's not going to go well, and that's going to cause some friction. I remember, I think it was season 4, a lot of people, and I still remember Blauerfackel, who voiced Gary, said, I thought these two were headed for divorce.
Isn't her mom kind of, so she's always been, like,
spoken of.
Yeah, like Norm's wife on Cheers.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. I've adopted both of my children, and just legality-wise, once Avery signs that paper, she doesn't have any say over that child's life anymore. She's done. And it's Nora's choice to allow Avery in her life or not, and that could be some of the dilemma, because Nora could cut off all contact and walk away, and legally she could do it.
Dan, if you want another contract to start talking about instead of the dough contract,
oh boy,
then it's all about the baby paperwork.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be glib about any of this. Please feel free to metaphorically kick me in the shin if I say anything untoward or uneducated or dumb or about adoption.
No, I'm not taking offense.
Did this season meet, exceed, or fall short of your expectations, and why? And I will start to say that it exceeded my expectations. I said this in seasons 5, 6, and 8. Last season, as well as season 7, I said they met. Why? I got two reasons. I felt it exceeded the expectations because there was a meaningful introduction of not one, not two, but three characters, all of whom add depth to one or more existing characters. And Even more than that, that no episode feels as though it can be discarded, even if where it detracted, you know, kind of looking back at you least favorite episodes, that the elements of all those episodes were needed to best understand and appreciate the whole progression of the season, even the Holy Exposition Batman episode. I don't think you completely discard it, because in the midst of all of that, there are some key pieces of information that help you understand where Kingston and Barry were coming from and how they're going to approach Max in terms of what they said and how they said it. But at the same time, I recognize you can still have favorite and least favorite. There were times in previous seasons where it was part of the reason it was my least favorite episode is because we could completely cut it from the season and it wouldn't make a lick of difference. And I really wanted to avoid having an episode that was just a complete write-off, where you could say, just forget about it, and you're not going to be any worse off. In fact, you might even be better. And I'm going to ask Jennifer to answer this question next, as the other person on this recording who is returning, as it were, especially when you think about other seasons. Not that I try to compare it to other seasons, but did it meet or exceed your expectations?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. All killer, no filler. to use some really dated radio lingo. The information from 10.03 and 10.04 could have been spread out a bit more, but you're right. It's all information that we all needed to be able to understand certain things. And there wasn't anything that felt gratuitous either. I didn't get the feeling that there was any kind of awful for awful's sake, except in the sense that there are those characters who are just awful for their own sake. But it's not like we could see the invisible hand of the author behind it going, mwah-ha-ha-ha-ha.
It's a good imitation.
Of me? Hey, now. Yeah. So, Tim, did the meet, exceed, or fall short of your expectations, season 10 of One More Turn?
It exceeded.
Oh.
I wasn't sure exactly what I was getting into. I listened to one episode just to get a little bit of point of reference, and I found it quite engaging.
Oh, fantastic. That's very satisfying as a writer, whatever your medium of choice is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people to just listen to an episode and then be done with it. I want you to want to come back. I want you to become invested in the story and invested in the characters, which I think you invest in the characters first and then the story second. At least that's my approach. So fantastic.
No, I was quite happy with the way the episodes went. I found myself actually reading the parts I wasn't in just to get a feel for the entire story. Okay, what's going on in the greater scheme of things? And I think you did an excellent job of moving the plot around to the different characters at different points in time.
Woo! And what about you, NER? Did they fall short your expectations? Were they met? Were they exceeded?
I wasn't sure what my expectations were, so it's tough for me to say.
Fair enough.
Just one of those things that, like, it's a show that's been on for 10 seasons now, so it has to be at least pretty good. One of the things I did notice was that it had, like, all the Dan hallmarks. So, like, top 10 list, beta reference, a whole bunch of Civilization references. This is a guy who is writing for himself in here somewhere.
You know, one of those things where they say, but you write about what you know, is always very much in my mind. And I very much enjoy incorporating elements of me, but putting them into characters that are not me.
Yeah, that's the best kind of Easter eggs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And as much as possible, and I know we talked about this on previous commentaries, Jennifer, but I tried to have it so that in writing the dialogue, even if it's, oh, this idea clearly came from Dan, I tried not to have it be the, oh, this is another version of Dan talking, like in terms of the word choice in particular. And I know Dark Cloud has been particularly helpful with that. It was never initially the plan that Max was named after Maxville, but when I was trying to decide on Max's brother's names, I don't know, I just thought of a city that's near me, which is Kingston. It's also the city that my wife was living in at the time that I met her. Aww. And then I'm like, oh, what other cities in Ontario could have someone's first name? Oh, it could be Barry, and then make an emphasis, but this is Barry with an IE, not a Y, like Barry would often be as a name. And then I'm like, oh, Max, there's a Maxville, Ontario. And so Max is getting clever about it and just says Max. And it's almost like it was always planned. And it was not. It was totally only in the planning of this season that I came up. Wow. Hidden secrets of the show.
Behind the scenes.
I appreciate the IE, not a Y switch up as well.
And that's Canadian content one step removed, because all I can hear is, you know, Anne with an E.
So the city of Kingston, Ontario is known as the Limestone City because of all the naturally occurring limestone around it. I don't know how I thought about it. It's like, limestone is not a breathable material. Oh, no, Kingston liked the clothing line. What do you hope the audience's takeaways are from this season?
Hey, when's the next season? I can't wait to see what happens next.
So once again, I had both a serious and a funny takeaway.
All right.
The funny takeaway was, voicemail is free. Please set it up and use it.
Oh, Carson, yes. Oh, yeah, Carson's probably saving some good nickels.
I mean, it should be free at this point for everyone. I don't think I've seen a plan that doesn't have free voicemail at this point.
Well, sometimes if you've got a grandfather enough in an account, I don't know about your carrier. He could be on a plan that he has data on his account, which I wonder if he does, seeing as how it doesn't even have voicemail. It probably still might be measured in megabytes as opposed to gigabytes at this point. So, yeah.
Ouch.
Oh, ow. Yeah.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly just useful life advice and just, you know, review stuff and how you're spending your money and figure out what doesn't make sense.
About the serious takeaway.
So the serious takeaway was doing the right thing. Getting the adoption and actually getting good people instead of just continuing down the spiral of being a bad person.
Yeah, I hope so too. I mean, I already know the answer to that question, but I'm just going to, for the sake of this, I'm going to be like, yeah, I hope so too.
And I will also say, I'm really happy that the lack of voicemail was not the linchpin of this season's plot. Speaking of expectations. One of the things I absolutely hate in writing is the idiot ball plot, where this thing would have been solved for the entire thing if people were actually adults and did basic stuff like that.
What about you, Tim?
I'm hoping that they're as excited as me to see the next season.
I hope the audience takeaways from this season 10 of One More Turn is that the introduction of the three new characters are giving new depth to Max with his brothers, and Avery in particular with his cousin, and that the character's introduction is welcome and meaningful. Not that you would want to necessarily welcome any of these characters into your home, let alone your lives. And I think as much as we've understandably talked about Barry and Kingston, because their voice performers are able to be with us for this recording, but the Dominic character, I think it was important for Dominic in particular, for Avery, and Avery to have another character in the show that is not simply a, oh, well, it's because of Avery's professional circumstance that these people are involved. Like, we're getting a little bit into Avery's story before she was on the show, which a lot of the other characters, most of the other characters, have already gotten into some degree. And I realized there was Jacob, and again, there was that element to it, but that was more towards Avery in adulthood. Like, that was high school to adulthood. This relationship with Dominic goes back even farther than that. I also really hope, and this is maybe a stretch, but I'm hoping not too much of a stretch, that the tie-ins to the first season, I mean, generally the Doe contract, but moreover the assault that Carson handed Hudson in that first season, that the tie-ins are fitting, that they're not necessarily predictable, but hopefully they're not contrived. Like, oh, Dan is just trying to find some way to validate the first season, that for a lot of shows that go multiple seasons, they try to distance themselves from the first season. I try to distance it in terms of not repeating it, but still, I want to treat it like it, in fact, did happen. You know, I don't want it to be like, no one talks about what happened in the first season. But more than anything, and you kind of let us off there with it, Jennifer, which is that, hey, there's more story to tell, and that there's sufficient plot and particular character development in this season to warrant people to want to continue to listen in and tell others.
That was a really good bit of dialogue there. It was very entertaining. So thank you.
Yeah. It's interesting how it's better in the verbalizing than just the reading.
Oh, absolutely. It brings the words to life, as it were.
This is coming to a head. I think a lot of people are venting out their feelings, and maybe they can make the breaks they need to and get out of this area. Man, they're just not good for each other.
It occurs to me, Dan, that you're going to need to put the whole podcast onto a thumb drive and then drop it somewhere out in the woods somewhere for your son to find, like all good.
Oh, no. I'm pretty sure my offspring will never know this exists.
What's your one wish for the character you voice, or a character?
I chose Kingston because, well, I read all his lines like seven times. My hope is actually that Kingston gets a paternity lawsuit.
I feel like you're referring to one line specifically from this season. Oh.
Yes.
The idea of either of those two idiots spawning is terrifying.
That was from episode 1004, where Kingston says, with any luck, I have a number of kids that I don't even know about, yes, let alone pay for.
And that's actually kind of why I want to see it, because it's not just the, oh yeah, I have a kid, but also now he has to realize that he has a kid and he actually needs to be an adult and pay the bills that he incurred and or, you know, actually help raise him.
And man, I would pay really, really good money to have somebody, anybody, have to explain to Max with a straight face the concept of boy.
I like that. I mean,
the only person that even responds to what Kingston says is Max, and Max's comment is, I'm just going to ignore that. Which is, I don't really don't know what you say to that. Maybe Max should have even said that, but I put that line in there because I thought it was funny.
Max is very much one part Sheldon, one part Mr. Rogers, and one part Steve Rogers, all mixed up together with a little bit of the absent-minded professor thrown in just for funsies. He ignores that comment from Kingston because I don't think it would have occurred to him that that's a thing you could do or would want to.
We don't know the context of that or what the expectations were. And also, as a side, Kingston has also made it clear that he bats for both teams. So anybody that he finds attractive, he's more than willing to sleep with. He may very well have a number of lawsuits on his hand.
Honestly, I kind of assume that he was lying about part of that.
In my mind, he's not lying about that. He doesn't discriminate.
Oh, but God, that he's the evil version of Captain Jack from Doctor Who.
And Torchwood, yes. He doesn't take it seriously at all. It's just no inhibitions in that respect. That's interesting, though. I hadn't thought about him possibly getting himself a lawsuit or just suddenly being. And now I'm thinking about when Gary left the show and Evelyn came on and just said, well, it's your turn to parent Bella now. I'm out of here. Maybe that's what's going to happen to Kingston. And it might happen with more than one woman saying, all right, it's your turn to parent now. Here you go. I would definitely turn his world upside down. Wow.
I gotta say, who's a daytime talk show that did all that?
Oh,
Jerry Test Reveals.
Springer?
Yep.
Man, this town and this cast could absolutely use like a Ricky Lake show or something.
What is the one wish for Barry? And that's Barry with an IE, not a Y.
No more Barry jokes.
Oh, that means I have to have one every episode that he's in now. I'll just make a note of that.
Yeah, okay.
Somebody needs to bang a shoe on a table and start yelling, we will bury you. Sorry.
My hope is figure out what him and his brother are up to.
Oh, you mean that we as the audience know that? Not that he knows. He figures that out. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. For the character himself to actually get what he wants. Although I don't think that's going to happen.
Ooh, what is it that you think that he wants? And why would you want him to have it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I haven't figured that out. I would love to see what's going to happen and what he's planning and what's the plot.
I'm going to kind of tie this back to NER as well, seeing as how you voice brothers. In this revelation, would you like to see Barry kind of distance himself from Kingston?
I would. But again, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Kingston's the lead. I think Barry's just there because he's got nowhere else to be. He's all in on the plan. I don't think he'll distance himself from it.
Kind of back to you, NER. Would you like to see Kingston distance himself from Barry?
I like the dynamic, even though they're kind of jerks to each other. And that's what makes, I think, both characters kind of pop.
Okay. I kind of even kind of have it in my head that I think Barry would do better by himself, but I don't think Kingston would do better by himself. I think Kingston needs minions, either real or perceived, in order to function. But either way, for their sake, in terms of what they want to do, they do need to continue to work together.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think you're absolutely right in terms of Kingston just doesn't have anyone to play off of.
What about you, Jennifer? What's your one wish for Avery next season?
My one wish for Avery. I kind of hope that she sort of ends up like the Grinch at the end of the cartoon where her heart grows three sizes. I still kind of like her spicy, but maybe have some of the sharp edges maybe sanded down a little bit.
It's fair to say, and it would be a disservice to do this otherwise, but Avery as a character as we know it is not going to be the same. Avery as pregnant Avery is different before pregnancy Avery, and then regardless of what happens with the adoption of the child, she is going to be different.
Yeah, I mean, this iteration of Avery is not the one that I was in, what was it, season 3 or 4, where y'all figured out that I could roll my R's really well.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, it's purring, yes, yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's not who she is anymore. I mean, it's still there, but it's not her whole personality. Because if she couldn't do, then, you know, she wouldn't be in the position she's in right now.
That's true. Oh, my one wish for Hudson for next season. I don't even know if I can say this without laughing.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Take a shower. Take a break from all the personal drama. Yeah, okay. But also, seriously, put some effort into your business, which is One More Turn Solutions, which is kind of my in-show reason for calling it One More Turn, because it started with Carson and his brother Caleb, and then also Riley and Hudson around this One More Turn Solutions business. And Hudson now owns One More Turn. And you need to put some effort into the business and your professional reputation, because you are going to need it to support yourself, Hudson. And maybe somebody else, if Avery changes her mind again, or if Hudson decides he wants to be involved in this child's life in some way, like, you need to be able to look after yourself. And even though you're trying to help this child has been as much, who am I kidding, more about you than somebody else, you really haven't been taking care of your own business by getting involved in other people's business so much, in particular this season. So I think even though he is personal drama, even if he is garden variety evil, is kind of like that, as Jennifer has referred to him, he still needs to have the resources to do what it is that he wants to do and needs to do, unless he's just been doing that really well, quote unquote, off screen. It's not a visual medium, but off screen. One More Turn Solutions is in trouble, because there's absolutely no talk this season about any work that he was doing. As much as people were getting on Carson's case, rightly so, about you didn't have to come back here, you could be doing this work remotely. At least he apparently is doing some work. I don't know what Hudson's doing. He's not independently wealthy.
If Hudson is intending to be the Victor Newman of this particular soap opera, then he needs to take care of his business to have the money to do that. That was a Young and the Restless reference, kids.
Good Lord.
Just when you thought they couldn't slop down more. Huh?
Now I absolutely understand why reading this whole script just gave me a vague ick.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd say you might want to see a doctor about that, but they're just going to go, eh.
Yeah, and my question in the chat about Bella being a vampire was about needing an invitation to go across the threshold.
How old is Hudson Scott? Oh, we want to know. He's acting like some 13-year-old brat. Well, I don't know. I think that's being unfair to 13-year-olds. More like 12.
Yeah.
But I also want to point out that Dominic's line of Avery about the middle part of your Venn diagram is something else. I again credit you, Jennifer, for referencing a few seasons ago about wanting a Venn diagram of, you know, everybody schlepping with everyone else. So there you go. I wanted to put it into the show.
Thank you.
I just want to say that every time I see the line, the rustling of clothes, I get a little nervous. I have to be honest. I'm like, what's happening?
Uh-huh.
A bit nervous. And it's all inconsequential. Nothing's really happening, but it's said several times.
And we know Dan is just doing this placeholders to remind himself of what sound effects are necessary. But still, you know, there's been enough of a merry-go-round of makeups and breakups and hookups and whatnot that I can see why you might be a little gun-shy.
I always liked writing stories as a kid. I still even remember in grade 2 getting in trouble for not putting my creative writing away when we were supposed to move on to math. And I just like the freedom to be able to tell stories, particularly that I felt like I couldn't tell myself, that I wouldn't live myself for one reason or another, and to be able to incorporate the drama, which I always wrote as a kid, but I didn't use a lot of humor. Only when I got to an adult did I like the idea of also making people laugh. But I don't want people laughing at characters. You know, I wanted them to be laughing at circumstances. But I also wanted to be able to tell a story that people would want to listen to and come back again. And that although I put it into episodes, it's an arc. The characters are changed by what happens to them. It's not a reset button every time. I could develop this universe where, again, people would see themselves in other characters and want to enjoy it, just want to be able to say that there's something in this show for most, I'm going to say most everyone, and to be able to tell the story, to connect with people who would be willing to tell the story, and to have the platform, the medium that is the internet, to be able to share that with like-minded people. Having an ensemble cast like we do have, having the introduction of these three new characters, we really only started to scratch the surface because, similar to when Avery was introduced into the second season, it was more about her relationship to already established characters. And that's kind of what we have here with Dominic, Barry, and Kingston. Although I think Barry and Kingston benefited from already knowing each other and being brothers because we got a little bit of sense of their personality and their interaction with each other as compared to necessarily what their relationship is with Max and Nora and now extending into the rest of the cast. What's kept me writing it has been being able to share this with other people. Like, I wrote stories myself that I would share with a few people when I was younger, but then I really didn't come back to it. Most of the people who read it were family and friends, and they were doing it to humor me. They really weren't interested in it themselves. I can't imagine doing it without other people. It adds to the enjoyment of it. And the fact that we're here doing a 10th season commentary, and I've got three of you here that have spent hours talking to me about this universe that we've been involved with and treat it seriously, like not super seriously, but to go into this depth into the story and make me even think differently about sometimes the motivations of characters that I've written. It's validating. It's humbling. All the good feels. Thank you, everyone, for listening to at least some of this commentary. This commentary on One More Turn Season 10 over at onemoreturn.net. I'm Dan Q, and I want to thank Jennifer.
Oh, of course. It was a lot of fun.
Tim.
I had so much fun as well. I'm glad to be part of this, and thank you for inviting me.
And NER for joining me.
Is this where we go and talk about how we have one more topic?
Is that the MCU with after credits?
Thank you all for joining me on this. I wouldn't want to do a commentary with just myself. It's much more enjoyable to listen as well as speak about this show. To not just be here on the recording and say, uh-huh, yeah, great comment, Dan, but to also, or that was stupid. Well, you might have thought about doing that too. I don't know. But to be prepared to talk about it and to be able to, again, talk to each other, not just at each other about this show.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us.
Yep. Yes, thank you, Dan.
And here's to season 11. Woo.
Yes.
The adventure continues. Whether people want... Oh, good. I was going to say, whether people want to or not, it's coming.
Music by Kevin MacLeod. Voiceover by Sedwick. Visit the One More Turn website at onemoreturn.net. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.
Interesting.
Which is a nice word that we could use to describe this show, but we will not.
I was about to say, the word I would use is bombastic.